Good morning. I've asked Ms Irving to come back so we can just ask some very confined questions about the memo that Ms Irving filed dated 5 of July, because it's where it represents the Council's latest thinking, and we've not had the benefit of evidence. And really the purpose of the questions is not to talk about the actual wording of any provision that you have in here, but really try to understand the relief now sought by the territorial authorities, and what is the relief now sought, and what are the potential pathways for that relief, bearing in mind that there is at least one scope challenge to part of the relief that is there, and that needs to be decided, and we don't need to talk about that because there's some submissions on it. And bearing in mind that other parties also have a view on the matters as to do with duration. So again, we don't need to debate about that, but we are just simply trying to get a handle on the relief pathways through your provisions. So that's it. And I wanted to turn to the second rule, which is the new second rule would apply in option one, which is the rule for new takes only. Mm-hmm. And I know this is the new takes only. Okay. In your first line, in the second line of Rule 10A3-1A3, so the second rule in the second line, it states there that that the rule is to apply for the purpose of a community water supply not previously authorised. But in the matters of discretion, matter number A, here the rule is the council's limiting its discretion to where the permit is to provide an existing water scheme. Mm-hmm. And we were unsure whether the two were in conflict, a new water supply, a community water supply not previously authorised versus something that is authorised but you need a new take, whether they were in conflict, or if not in conflict, then what was endeavoured to be sought here is both new permits, as in the case of Luggett, which is a good example, to supply an existing water scheme, and together with new water schemes not yet imagined, but which may be over the duration of the plan. So we weren't sure what was the scope.
So the intention of the rule is to provide a pathway for new consents, and that is potentially schemes that have not yet or don't yet exist, and so that is in part a response to the potential requirement for a council to respond to a new development that they hadn't anticipated, but also be a response to the Luggett type scenario, and where the matters of discretion A would be relevant would be in that Luggett type scenario. So my understanding is that A wouldn't apply in relation to an entirely new take for a new scheme, but is there to ensure that there is that analysis of an existing scheme, if it is a new take to supply an existing scheme.
And so if it is a new take for a new scheme, then only the matters in B and C, D, E, and F would apply. Under that rule. as matters of, you know, in terms of restriction or discretion.
Yes.
So in relation to matter B and, matter B, what is the policy that that matter of discretion implements? So that's the matter, in this rule, dealing the extent to which the supply is used for purposes other than drinking water.
Well, I don't think there is a an obvious policy hook in Plan Change 7. Probably the closest that there would be in the proposed 10A 2.2 would be one of the topics identified for the water management plan, but it's probably, and that would be Romans 6.
So how could this matter of discretion, is this truly a matter of discretion? So as a matter of policy, you're required to do an analysis of water use patterns for different sectors for the purpose of identifying end users, and then as a matter of discretion, the extent to which supply is used for purposes other than drinking water.
Mm.
How would you go about exercising that discretion?
It's a good question. I think what that particular matter of discretion is seeking to respond to is effectively the priorities in Te Mana o Te Wai, and providing an opportunity to ensure that community water supplies don't become a Trojan horse for wider uses, recognising that Plan Change 7 is seeking to put in place that holding pattern to allow the full allocation regime to be developed through the Land and Water Plan. But I'd accept that that matter of discretion is not... it's a little opaque in that respect.
Does it make more sense or any sense if Mr. Twos's definition of community water supply, which I think he had in his third supplementary, or his second supplementary, but third brief, is included in this, or was there a reason for not including it?
No, there wasn't a conscious decision not to include it. There's obviously been quite a lot of conversation about the definition and the potential challenges with it.
I'm
just going to, if you don't mind, just bring that up and just
mean, I think the definition would provide some further context to that matter of discretion as it's drafted.
Is it context now that we're after, or certainty in a definition?
For a definition, you'd prefer certainty. Although I think community water supplies are particularly fuzzy by their nature. So I think there's always going to be a degree of grey area in relation to community schemes. And I think that's effectively what B is driving at. And I would anticipate that discretion exercised under B might see conditions that result in different levels of control in relation to uses that were not drinking water, for example. So during periods of low flow, the uses that are not drinking water, and if we use the Stirling example, you know, there might be controls on access to water for dairy shed supply, say. Although I'm not sure that flows in the Clutha are probably subject to low flow conditions to the same extent as other catchments in Otago. So I think that would be the type of thing that the matter of discretion in B is opening the door for.
When you said earlier that matter B in the second rule reflects priorities in Te Manawa Te Wai, and that community water schemes not be a Trojan for wider uses. What did you mean by that?
Well, that effectively they don't provide an opportunity for large-scale Tier 3 activities to obtain longer-term consents. Effectively, the territorial authority's position is that by virtue of its obligations to provide water supply, its recognition as a Tier 2 priority within the NPS, there is, I suppose, a justified exception to the six-year timeframe. And B is about, I think, providing an opportunity for the council to ensure that the community water supplies don't broaden their focus beyond that purpose.
Okay. So I've noted that the TA's position is that by virtue of their obligation to provide drinking water for human consumption, that's what you mean in terms of the reference to Tier 2. It's the objective in the NPS for freshwater management, and the second objective, which is second-level objective or Tier 2 objective, which is to provide that freshwater meet human needs.
Yes, health needs of people.
Needs of people. And specifically here, you're saying TAs have an obligation or a duty to provide drinking water for human consumption. it accepts that that is the case, but and B is about not broadening that out to other uses, and I take it specifically other uses which are covered by the objective in freshwater management tier 3.
Correct.
Yeah.
If I could perhaps just add there, the tier two priority is of course the health needs of people, such as drinking water, and thinking of Ms. Muir's evidence in relation to the Cromwell supply, where she highlighted that one of their reasonably large uses of water for that supply was to provide water to their wastewater treatment plant. In my view, that would fit within that second order priority, given the importance of those types of treatment systems to a healthy community.
And again, with reference to the second rule, subparagraph C, Roman numeral 6, what is the policy that this is implementing? 6, a description of patterns of water use.
I think my answer to that question would be the same as previously, that it is a link to the matters described in the proposed policy. The intention there being to provide essentially an opportunity or require consideration of how the territorial authorities are working to improve the efficiency of their schemes and of the people utilising the water being delivered by the schemes. And that's, I think, as we talked about yesterday, effectively the, for lack of a better word, the quid pro quo, the longer terms necessitating the councils to do better in terms of their water use efficiency and more closely managing that so that they're effectively, one would hope, reducing the amounts of water being taken or alternatively being able to cater for growth by virtue of efficiency gains.
And I think that would be consistent, I think, with the expectations of all water users in the context of the NPS.
In relation to those applications for TAKES, which are truly new, so there's no existing infrastructure for a community water supply in ground, the policy and rules do not address the effect of the proposed taking on the environment. Is that correct?
These ones don't, no.
Yeah.
And that is because in both of the options, it is intended that the discretionary rule in the operative plan would continue to be applicable. Mm-hmm. So that by virtue of that, there would be full discretion in relation to the effects. Of course, if it is an entirely new take, there is likely to be associated consents required for the establishment of intake infrastructure and or installation of a bore, where those effects would be captured. So the purpose of the second rule in Plan Change 7 was to really introduce the water management efficiency obligations. Now, I think, as I alluded to in the memorandum, I think if the policy is broadened... If the policy was broadened to include those water management obligations, then, and that applies, of course, to an application for a new permit under the operative plan, then that is possibly a neater way than the dual rule solution.
That's your option two?
Yes.
Option two applies to, has a backstop date of 2035. It applies to replacement applications under PC7 only. And by that I mean, I understand you to say replacement applications proceed under PC7 only, but aren't going under both plans?
Correct. So that's essentially... the Plan Change 7 status quo option.
So that's the that's in relation to both duration and effects.
Correct.
And for I was replacement application.
Yes. And I was reflecting this morning on whether the rule... And I think conversations that we were having yesterday about the need to assess effects for consents that may achieve a longer duration. And the rule that is proposed, given it is restricted discretionary, perhaps doesn't go far enough in that regard for the replacement consents. But in terms of the new consents, whether it be for a new take location for an existing scheme or an entirely new scheme, it was my view that by virtue of the discretionary rule in the operative plan, that there was essentially full scope for those effects to be considered in that circumstance.
So for new new permits, and that's either for a new scheme or in relation to an existing scheme, proceed under the operative regional water plan.
Yes.
Plus the policy on duration under this plan.
Yes. Which is effectively what occurs under the... I don't know which version of Plan Change 7, but the notified one, if we start there, is that new permits proceed under the operative rules subject to the policies in Plan Change 7.
And you said the RDA doesn't go far enough for replacement consents, and what did you mean by that?
Well, I was just reflecting on the discussions, I suppose, that took place yesterday around what effects are relevant to an assessment. And I think we were talking particularly in relation to the proposed drafting for hydro. And is it simply the effects of the longer duration? Is it the effects of the whole activity? And the rule that I had included in my memorandum for the replacement consents has been really picked up from Mr. Twoos's draft. And considering it this morning, in light of that conversation yesterday, there really perhaps isn't a matter of discretion that captures the effects of the longer duration in the same way as Mr. Welsh had proposed.
And is it your submission there needs to be?
Yeah, look, I think that would be appropriate.
Those are my matters of clarification. You got anything, Commissioner?
No?
Commissioner? Okay, good. So the questions for clarifications, but thank you very much. Thank you. Over to you, Mr. Moore.
Thank you and good morning. Two matters to address before the closing submissions.
Yeah.
The first relates to the description I provided yesterday in relation to the trust power assets which require new permits.
Yeah.
Mr. Welsh was diligently listening to the audio last night and must have been having trouble sleeping.
Because at 1 o'clock in the morning.
Yes, he pointed out to me that my description of the two new applications might not have been entirely accurate. So just for the record, I would like to just reflect back that which he has reflected to me in terms of the two replacement, the two new. So the first was in relation to the Beaumont bypass.
Hold on, I'll just find something to write this up on. So I've got Blackrock Race, Beaumont Race, Shepherd's Race, Crystal's Race and Deep Stream. I'm wanting to edit something.
No changes necessary to the schedule. It was my description of the two new applications, which are both covered by the schedule. Mm. So in relation to Beaumont, there is a bypass application, and that application is an application relating to diverting water away from being captured in the Beaumont race, which allows water to continue to flow down an ephemeral pathway. And that was to stop excess water being taken into that race and causing the race to blow out, which had caused some issues in the past. And so the bypass race is and has been designed to ensure that the underlying race doesn't receive more water than it can handle in high flow events. The second new was the deep stream enhancement. And the scheme does not require or involve the intake of a new intake or a new intake infrastructure. There's no change to an existing residual flow requirement, which was a 50 litres per second. Rather, that application is essentially a flood take when flows exceed a certain threshold. So it is taking more water, flood harvesting essentially, but the minimum flow of 50, minimum residual of 50 litres per second is to remain in place.
And that can be taken with the existing intake infrastructure?
I'm not sure about that. If more, a greater volume of water is to be taken, it may be that additional infrastructure is required. I don't know.
All right. Very good.
So that was the first matter. The second matter relates to Schedule 10A4. You'll recall that Mr. De Pelsmaker had some homework to do in relation to the clarifications that had been discussed. Now, there's perhaps two ways that we could deal with that issue. Mr. De Pelsmaker could be sworn or re-sworn and could give his answers orally in relation to those matters. Alternatively, he suggested that the matters of clarification could be tracked into the version attached to the joint witness statement for clarifications, which was one of the two filed, and essentially a final joint witness statement with all of the corrections tracked in, signed by all of those technical witnesses.
That sounds much better.
Could be provided later this week. So
okay, no, that sounds much better. We just need them captured somewhere in a document.
Yes,
so
and
we
that
can
rather
take
than
that one off our desk.
Stepping through and
oh, absolutely,
handwrite.
Because it didn't seem, even though maybe a definition is required for one of those formulas, that from what I understand, that doesn't seem particularly contentious. So,
no, not as I understand it, not contentious at all. And there will be some further text explaining which of those two options in the brackets would apply.
So it's not a pick and mix.
No. And then there's a series of correction to capitalisation, so that can be picked up. And there are.
Yep. No, that sounds good. So, you know, even beginning of next week is fine on Monday to have that JWS with tracking to the schedule, the completion of the updating of the schedule, having in relation to review of its terms and confirming what its terms are in the useful language. All right.
Yes.
Oh, is that all right? Next week. It's not. It's one of those jobs that has to be
needs
done.
Needs to be right.
And it has to be right. But I'm not busting a boiler to get it even next week, as long as it's done.
Yes, Monday should not be a problem at all.
Okay. And if it is, just let us know. Yep, all right. Well, that's it.
Monday might be tricky.
Monday might be tricky, but if it is...
Do your best.
Yeah, do your best, but the only thing I can do at the end of your reply is adjourn, because we've got other things
got
to
other
cover,
matters.
So it's not as if we're actually closing the hearing.
Yes.
Okay, very good.
That brings me on to the closing legal submissions for the council.
Yep.
Copies of which will be handed up. Now, we've managed to get them single-sided for the court, but I haven't managed to get an index in. That was beyond our technical capability.
Yep.
So
that's all right.
That, these submissions are filed in closing on behalf of the Otago mm-hmm. Regional Council, and I've set out at my paragraph one just the structure. Mm-hmm. I don't propose to read through that, but in broad terms, dealing with the superior policy instruments as a topic towards the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
I then deal with matters where the Council considers there should be some further adjustments made to Plan Chain 7, so the likes of priorities, hydro and community mm-hmm. water schemes. And then I deal with a range of issues that have arisen through submissions and have been pursued by some parties, but where the Council doesn't support that yep. relief that has been pursued. I'm hopeful that there are some parts of the submission that might be able to be taken as read, mm-hmm. but we'll see how we go. So the first topic to address is the question of whether an interim planning framework is required. So I'm at my paragraph two. Council addressed the need for PC7 in opening legal submissions and has tested this with witnesses throughout the hearing, where many have acknowledged the inadequacies of the operative regional plan for water, including that the operative plan is ill-equipped to consider the effects of land use on water quality, does not give effect to mana or to wai, or enable sufficient consideration of cultural values, and contains a flow and allocation regime that is non-compliant with the NPSFM 2020. The deficient state of the operative planning framework presents a significant risk that long-term resource consents will be granted that will preclude the Council from effectively phasing out over-allocation of water resources across the region in accordance with the NPSFM 2020. The risk presented by long-term consents is the undermining of the new integrated planning framework that will be put into action, that will put into action the paradigm shift required to manage freshwater in accordance with Te Mana o Te Wai. All planning witnesses appearing before this court have accepted the need for Plan Chain 7, including Ms Dicey for ORUG, who acknowledged that there does need to be an interim framework, and I've set out the relevant evidence there.
Mm-hmm.
Despite this acknowledgement, ORUG still seeks the deletion of PC7 and considers it appropriate to grant long-term permits under the operative plan with a reliance on review conditions. The Council's position is that a case has been made that an interim planning framework is required. A change to the current planning framework is necessary while the Council's land and water regional plan is being developed. The key issue for the court's determination is what the interim framework should look like. In terms of the mandate for the development of Plan Chain 7, it was that it was to be developed in accordance with the following principles. First, the focus must remain on the bigger picture, the water plan review. The water permit plan change, that is PC7, should be as concise as required to achieve a fit-for-purpose management regime. Second, water allocation should be based on water use, not paper allocation. Third, consideration of potential impacts on existing water abstractors and existing priorities and deemed permits, which was interesting to see that in the list in terms of the drafting capturing the element of priorities where abstraction as between existing abstractors was to be considered. Efficiency of time and cost for both the Council and applicants and other parties, and opportunities for data gathering that will inform the water plan review should be pursued. It became clear early in the hearing that the effectiveness of the plan change in achieving its purpose as a process plan change had been diluted through the inclusion of certain environmental outcomes. The Council reviewed the 2 March 2021 version of PC7 and proposed amendments to ensure that the purpose of Plan Change 7 could be achieved. This purpose has been front of mind for the Council throughout the hearing and when confirming the Council's position in these closing submissions. So I turn now to the Superior Planning Instruments, that is the National Policy Statements. I've set out at paragraph 12 the three key National Policy Statements that are potentially in play in this proceeding. There is the potential for these policy statements to pull in different directions, the outcome of which might be that the provisions of PC7 need to be adjusted to accommodate different interests, such as hydroelectricity generation or community water supply schemes. The Supreme Court's decision in King Salmon remains the leading authority for interpreting superior planning documents. And I've set out the relevant passages from that decision. In the light of the Supreme Court's decisions, it submitted that the correct approach to interpreting the relevant national policy statements in Plan PC7 is as follows. First, the relevant provisions of each policy statement should be identified. Careful attention should be paid to the way in which the provisions are expressed. Second, a thoroughgoing attempt should be made to reconcile any apparent conflicting provisions. Again, paying careful attention to the way in which the provisions are expressed. Recourse to Part 2 of the Act is permissible if it assists in a purposive interpretation, if there is uncertainty as to the meaning of any provisions, or if the document being interpreted does not cover the field. Only after that analysis has been undertaken is there any justification for reaching a determination which has one policy prevailing over another. Now, Council has carefully considered the recent High Court decision of Justice Palmer in Tauranga Environmental Protection Society, Inc. and Tauranga District Council. It has submitted that that decision, which involved an application for resource consents as opposed to a plan change, does not alter the way in which the assessment and reconciliation of planning documents is to be carried out. I worked back through that decision again last night to see if it was shifting or changing, but in the context of a plan change, I don't see that decision as changing the approach that the Supreme Court has set out in terms of how the reconciliation process, when those documents can maybe pulling in different directions, is to occur.
Now, I haven't read it. It's been about 2 to 3 weeks since I read it, but it seemed to me that Justice Palmer would have been emphasising the reconciliation exercise and its importance, and the need to do this carefully, very carefully.
Very much so, and when you actually see how he went about that exercise, and it was done in quite some level of forensic detail as to the meaning of the words, and for reasons that I'll come on to submit, this is, I say, a particular moment when considering the words of the NPSUD and whether infrastructure, as that term is used throughout that document, might be read to include water takes, and without spoiling the surprise, my submission is it doesn't. It doesn't include or extend to the water takes. So that's the relevance, again, of the need to really carefully analyse the words.
Okay. So also heard this morning that decision's now been appealed.
Oh, happy days.
Probably no surprises. No surprises there, but it's been appealed. But I haven't looked at the notice of appeal to see what grounds it's actually appealing decision on.
In a sense, put that decision, I say that decision can be put to one side. It doesn't change the Supreme Court's description of how that process of reconciliation should occur. And if anything, my reading of it just was a demonstration of the reconciliation in action.
Yeah. Okay, very good. Thank you.
So turning now to the NPS for freshwater management, the opening legal submissions of the council noted that Plan Change 7 is required to give effect to the NPS FM 2020. It is required to do so where there is scope available within submissions and where it is reasonably practicable to do so. And I set out further submissions on what reasonably practicable means and the extent to which the document could be given effect to an opening. Having reviewed those submissions, there's nothing further that I would add at this point, but I rely on them.
Reread your opening.
Yes.
Yep.
The relevant provisions of the NPS FM were set out in those submissions. In addition to the policies expressly referred to at paragraph 48 of those submissions, it is submitted that policy 4 of the NPS FM is also relevant in the context of considering whether some further provisions might be appropriate for hydroelectricity generation. And I've set out policy 4 below. Policy 4 wasn't a policy that I had identified in opening, but having heard the evidence and the connection between climate change and renewable electricity, my submission is that policy is in play. Mm-hmm. And again, that's perhaps one of the policies that can be looked towards when trying to reconcile the NPS REG with the NPS FM. Mm-hmm. In my submission, the single objective of the NPS 2020, also the NPS FM, is of particular relevance with respect to Plan Change 7. It is this objective that sets out the hierarchy of priorities with respect to freshwater. What is clear from reading the hierarchy is that the health needs of water bodies and freshwater ecosystems must be provided for first before other uses are provided for, as in the Tier 2 or 3 uses. In the absence of having determined what levels of flow are necessary to sustain the health needs of water bodies and freshwater ecosystems, by following the implementation steps in Part 3, the allocation of water for Tier 2 or Tier 3 uses by long-term consents has the potential to frustrate the achievement of the Tier 1 priority. Council for Orug has advanced an argument that Plan Change 7 should be rejected on the basis that it fails to give effect to the NPS FM because there are better options available to give effect to Tamana or to Wai. Instead, Orug would prefer to rely on the existing planning framework with the overlay of the NPS FM and the recently notified proposed Otago Regional Policy Statement. In my submission, this argument fails for the following reasons. The existing planning framework is deficient and has been acknowledged to be deficient by planning witnesses before this court. It does not give effect to the NPS FM or any of its predecessors. The existing planning framework does not manage land and water resources in an integrated way, kia te kitai. The activity status for considering replacement consent applications under the existing planning framework is restricted discretionary, with the matters of discretion insufficiently wide to enable an effective assessment of effects on the environment. Now, I should acknowledge that the activity status does change depending on whether there's primary allocation available or not, but the submission that I make there is that there is insufficient ability to have recourse to a comprehensive set of objectives and policies that manage or seek to manage land and water resources in an integrated way within that planning framework. Given the limited matters of discretion, only limited regard might be had to the higher order planning documents such as the NPS, FM and the proposed RPS. Now, I make that submission because the policies that are engaged in or when considering a restricted discretionary activity are limited to those touching on the matters to which the discretion is restricted. The legal test for considering the NPS FM in the context of an application for resource consent is to have regard to. As such, applications for replacement consents do not have to give effect to the provisions of that document. In my submission, the risk that exists is that applicants might argue that limited weight should be placed on the NPS FM until such time as the highly prescriptive implementation process set out in Part 3 has been completed. And again, the risk there is one of the objective and policies being argued to be expressed at a level of generality that can't readily be applied in the context of an individual resource consent application.
Now, I do want to make a note of that, so being expressed. So being argued that the O's and P's, the O and P of the MPS FM is expressed at a level of generality that, what in relation to the resource consent process?
That is not readily able to be applied when considering an individual resource consent application. As in the flow and allocation regimes necessary to achieve both the objective and those policies won't necessarily have been set. And it's that context which is of particular relevance when considering individual applications. To deal with cumulative effects. Similarly, proposed RPS is in its infancy, and the legal test of that regard must be had to it. Now, whilst that document does signal a significant change in direction, there is a potential for arguments as to weight to arise, such as there is a risk that despite the clear change in policy, little weight may be placed on its provisions when considering individual resource consent applications. Further, it is submitted that the provisions of the proposed RPS that were brought to the court's attention by counsel for ORUG are not representative of the full suite of provisions, including in particular other objectives and policies requiring the integrated management of resources, such as objectives IMO1 to IMO4 and the 15 associated policies, essentially an entire chapter on integrated management. The risk of continuing with the status quo is that the water resources in the Otago region will be locked up for a period of time, or for an extended period of time. Mm-hmm. In my submission, the key question for the court to answer is whether PC7 better gives effect to the policy direction signalled in the NPSFM than allowing the status quo to continue. The word in should be inserted next. So in the light of the risks set out in, should now be paragraph 21,
yep,
above, I submit that PC7 is the most appropriate option and provides the best opportunity for Te Mana o Te Wai to be given its full expression and implementation through an NPSFM compliant planning framework within an acceptable time frame. For completeness, I also note that on the 5th of June this year, the Council publicly notified Amendment 3 to the operative plan to insert the NPSFM policies I've listed there. As set out in legal submissions for the Council on 16 March, the provisions can only be inserted into an operative plan. Therefore, once PC7 becomes operative, the Council will need to insert cross-references in Chapter 10A to Objective 8.35 and new policies 542A and 1048 so that these provisions can be considered when considering an application for a non-complying activity. These further changes can occur without the need to follow the process set out in Schedule 1 to the Act.
Mm-hmm.
I turn now to the NPS for urban development. And the question I pose is that document relevant to Plan Change 7? And so the question is, well, the legal obligation is that Plan Change 7 must give effect to the NPS UD to the extent that it is relevant. In my submission, that document has limited, if any, relevance to the court's determination on Plan Change 7. The primary focus of the NPS UD, to the extent that it touches on matters relevant to the supply of water, is on the integration of local authority decisions on urban development with infrastructure planning and funding decisions, and the provision and funding of network infrastructure for water supply to support the development of land. In my submission, its relevance does not extend to planning decisions regarding the supply of water. The NPS UD applies to all local authorities that have all or part of an urban environment within their district or region, that is the Tier 1, 2 or 3 local authorities, and planning decisions by any local authority that affect an urban environment. Dunedin and Queenstown are identified in the NPS UD as Tier 2 urban environments, which means that ORC, QLDC and Dunedin City Council are all classed as Tier 2 local authorities. Now, in the very recent case of Eden Epsom Residential Protection Society Incorporated, and I will hand a copy of that case up.
Is that Judge Stevens?
Judge Newhook.
Judge Newhook, okay. Right.
8th of June 2021. Now, the Environment Court considered which provisions of the NPS UD may be considered in a planning decision on the merits of a requested plan change, including an appeal to the Environment Court. The Court interrogated Part 2 of the NPS UD containing the objectives and policies and found that reference to planning decisions was quite limited among the 8 objectives and 11 policies, being found in only objectives 2, 5 and 7 and policies 1 and 6. Mm-hmm. Looking at the relevance of those objectives and policies in this context, it is submitted that those objectives and policies have no relevance to the decision of this Court on Plan Change 7 or of the Regional Council on an application for a water permit by a territorial authority, save for the requirement that planning decisions relating to urban environments take into account the principles of the Treaty of Waitangi, Te Tiriti o Waitangi, and that planning decisions contribute to well-functioning urban environments, which are urban environments that, as a minimum, include the matters which are set out in Policy 1. The Court in Eden Epsom considered that Part 4 of the NPS UD, which sets the timeframes for implementation, is important. In that case, the Auckland Council was required to promulgate a plan change in respect of intensification under Schedule 1 of the Act by 22 August 2022. The Court held that it was not required to and would not be given effect in that case to objectives and policies in the NPS UD that are not requiring planning decisions at this time. It acknowledged the promulgation and operative status of the NPS UD overall, but could not prejudge, let alone preempt, Schedule 1 processes yet to be undertaken by the Council and implementation of it. In light of this finding, to the extent that any other objectives and policies in the NPS UD are relevant to PC7, it is submitted this Court should not prejudge or preempt the processes that the territorial authorities and Regional Council are required to undertake under the NPS UD, including the preparation of housing and business capacity assessments and future development strategies. Having said that, it is submitted that the other objectives and policies in the NPS UD are not relevant to the Court's decision on Plan Change 7 or a decision on a water permit. Policy 2 of the NPS UD requires that Tier 1, 2 and 3 local authorities at all times provide at least sufficient development capacity to meet expected demand for housing and for business land over the short term, medium term and long term. The development capacity is defined, as I've set out at paragraph 37.
Just pause there. I did actually, for my sins, reread the NPS UD last night together with all of the TA's relief. but this isn't. I just need to reread this again as we go, as we track along.
In order to be sufficient to meet expected demand for housing, the development capacity must be, among other things, infrastructure ready. And I've set out the relevant clause which deals with what infrastructure ready means in this context.
And I'll just reread that again.
Now, I might just interpolate here. As I understood the submissions from my learned friend Ms Irving for the TAs, her submission was that water needed to be available for at least the short term and somewhere into the medium term. And when you look at the dates here, the short term is the next 3 years, and then into the medium term, which is between 3 and 10 years. If you think about the Plan Change 7 provisions as notified, which essentially provided a 6-year rollover permit, even if these provisions are found to be relevant, my submission is that the 6-year term actually responds appropriately to the timeframes set out in terms of development capacity infrastructure being infrastructure ready. Mm-hmm. Development infrastructure is also defined, and I've set that out in paragraph 40. Submission I make there is that it's reference to infrastructure, and on a close analysis of the wording used, my submission is that infrastructure does not extend to the water that is taken into that infrastructure. Therefore, the obligations in the NPSUD for Tier 1, 2 and 3 local authorities to provide sufficient development capacity in the short term, 1 to 3 years, require that there is adequate network infrastructure for water supply, that is, the pipes used to convey the water for supply, to support the development of land. In the medium term, 3 to 10 years, the funding for adequate network infrastructure to support the development of land needs to be identified in a long-term plan. There is no reference in the NPSUD to the need to ensure that water is available or that a water permit or any other authorisations are required or to be held. Development capacity for housing and business land must be plan enabled. Plan enabled means that the land is zoned in a district plan or identified by a local authority for future urban use or urban intensification in an FDS, or if the local authority is not required to have an FDS, any other relevant plan or strategy. Again, there is no requirement for water to be allocated in a regional plan or a water permit to be granted. For these reasons, it is submitted that the requirements in the NPSUD do not relate to a regional council's functions that are exercised through a regional water plan or the processing of water permits. This is further supported by Clause 4.1 of the NPSUD. Tier 1, 2 and 3 local authorities are only required to amend their regional policy statement or district plan to give effect to the provisions of the NPSFM. There is no requirement for a regional council to amend a regional plan.
And I know that we've discussed this, but my initial understanding of the MPS, FM and UD, and for that matter REG, was that the reconciliation exercise in providing is to be done in relation to the RPS. That's where it starts and how
yes.
those and different strands are reconciled. And I thought that because if you are in a water short catchment, somewhere in a catchment which is water short, can it be that the district council can plan for, say, population growth without actually understanding how the regional council itself is managing a freshwater resource? I mean, the two would completely go without out of sync, I thought.
Yes, and
they need to be synchronised or put in phase, is how I said it, and the place to do that was the RPS.
Yes, and viewed through the lens of integrated management,
yeah.
that must be what is contemplated.
Mm.
So that exercise, I'd accept, is intended to occur in the regional policy statement, and that's what part 4.1 of the NPSUD contemplates.
All right.
Right, in my submission, the NPSUD does not anticipate a planning decision on a regional plan or a water permit to be a planning decision to which the NPSUD applies. And again, I refer back to the analysis set out earlier and rely on the decision which I handed up in Eden Epsom in terms of that analysis. If the court were to find that the NPSUD is relevant, it is submitted that the provisions of the NPSUD and NPSFM are not inconsistent and can be reconciled. Now, Mr. Tews and Mr. De Palsmaker addressed this question in supplementary evidence. They both concluded that the two documents could be read and applied in a manner that avoids inconsistency, but equally acknowledged the lack of direction with respect to the integration of both documents. Now, just for completeness, I did read last night the Section 32 report in support of the NPSUD to see whether there was any consideration of water takes and allocation of water when the efficiency and effectiveness assessment was carried out, and I could find no such reference. Again, my submission is if it was contemplated that the NPSUD was to apply to water takes and water allocation, there would have been at least some reference within the Section 32 report.
Mm-hmm.
I next turn to the provisions of the NPSREG. They were set out in my opening legal submissions. While there is the potential for the provisions of the NPSREG to conflict with the provisions of the NPSFM, it is my submission that the provisions can be reconciled in the context of PC7. Context is important in this regard, and only limited exceptions have been sought and recommended for hydroelectricity generation assets, those being limited to Trust Power's Waipori and Deep Stream scheme. Insofar as limited provision is made for hydroelectricity generation assets in PC7, it is submitted that the provisions of each of these two MPSs are not in conflict and can be reconciled. And I do address this issue a little further when I'm dealing with that topic.
Mm-hmm.
Perhaps one observation that I would make, though, is that the NPSREG and the language it uses is perhaps a function of the time at which it was promulgated, 2011.
Mm.
When you compare that language to the very directive language that you now see in both the NPSFM and the NPSUD, would be my submission that the directive nature of the language in particularly the NPSFM would assist with the reconciliation exercise insofar as directions might provisions might pull in a different direction. The second submission I'd make is that the NPSFM does contemplate hydroelectricity uses, and there are perhaps two relevant parts. First, the Tier 2, possibly Tier 3 use. So again, hydro is contemplated. And second, the NPSFM does specifically exclude listed large-scale hydroelectricity generation schemes from the requirements in the national policy frame, the framework, the appendix 1 and 2, the NOF, the National Objectives Framework. And just whilst I'm on that, my friend Mr. Welsh put to a series of witnesses the Section 32 report in support of his argument that hydro was in fact a Tier 2, or possibly a Tier 2 consideration. When you closely examine the Section 32 report, reference to hydro perhaps being Tier 2 was made in the context of an assessment of the provisions seeking to carve out the NOF framework for the large-scale schemes. Now, the Trustpower scheme at issue in Plan Chain 7 is not one of the listed large-scale schemes. So in my submission, the court would need to be careful relying on that Section 32 assessment as justification for finding that hydro in this context was Tier 2 or 3.
I thought that was one of the decisions you didn't want us to make.
For reasons that I'll go on to explain, that's a decision you don't have to make, right. But I just wanted to respond on the record.
This would
to
not be a good case, I think, to make it,
no.
Particularly if there's an exception recognised for Trustpower.
Yes.
Okay.
And that's the direction of travel I've taken
right.
in these submissions to avoid, hopefully, the need for that, for a decision to be made. But even if a decision had to be made, I would say that it would only respond in this context to the particular assets that were at issue on which you had evidence. It wouldn't necessarily be a finding that
all hydro.
Mm.
Mm. Okay.
What time did you want to take the morning break?
Oh.
I'm happy to keep. We started a little later. So.
Do you want to? I don't mind. We've been working hard. Actually since 8 o'clock, so probably could take a break now.
I've finished now with the higher level. Yes.
All right, so we'll take a break now.
All rise.